Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. I believe this has been misrepresented this day today because I do read the newsletter, but I didn't read this bit, and it had me as the speaker. But actually, this is not my story. This is our story. So Grace and I share this story together, because I wouldn't be here today if not for Grace as well. So it's she'll be speaking at times too. So we'll swap back and forwards. So the story of how we ended up being Catholic, and the even more surprising story of how I ended up being a married priest. There were no bolts of lightning, no burning bushes, just wonderful people and unexpected events which often seemed to mean nothing at the time. I was baptised Methodist at Bramble Heights. My parents were heavily involved in the church, both lay preachers, youth group leaders, served on many committees and associations in the church at local, state and national levels. And we were a very churchy family, but also a very normal family who enjoyed life, except for the fact that somehow my parents didn't seem to like Catholics. At age 8, I experienced Jesus' love for me, a story for another day, but this was the first time I decided to become a minister, which of course is a Protestant term for an ordained person. And then I took a mission when I was 15 to realise that I still had that calling, but funny how you forget things. My final year in high school in 1997, the Methodist Church became a part of the Uniting Church. And this was also the year I had my first substantial contact with the Catholic Church. Her name was Nancy. My mother worried about where things might go, so she regularly reminded me that I should not get too serious with this girl, because if we ever married, I would have to agree to bring our children up Catholic. And in a sense, these were prophetic words, because our children are Catholic. My first experience of the Catholic Mass was with Nancy and her mother, and I think it was even Graham Gatehouse, who was the priest of Brighton at the time. What did I notice? The collection plate went around 3 times, and everybody left straight after Mass, in quite a number before the end, which really surprised me, as it still does today. So I assumed no one bothered to want to relate to one another. I wasn't really too impressed.
I was born 5th in the line of 5 in Glasgow in Scotland. You can tell by my accent, I'm sure. The child of parents who became passionate about their relationship with God during the Billy Graham Crusades of the 1950s. It changed their world forever. And my family then chose to emigrate to Australia when I was 3, believing there would be greater opportunities for each of us youngsters. A remarkably courageous decision to take 5 children to the other side of the world. We were very involved in the Presbyterian and later the Uniting Church, and Mum and Dad were very involved in our local church, but most importantly, they taught us to seek God through Scripture and to pray. We were involved in Sunday school and Girls and Boys Brigade and later youth group, and all of my weekend socialising happened with the youth group kids. I was allowed to hang out with the Christian kids. In some ways, I had a very sheltered existence, and yet we always had really good, clean, positive fun. We were nurtured by wonderful adults from our church who encouraged us to develop a strong faith that we lived in every part of our lives, who encouraged us to use our gifts and to invite other people into relationship with God. I did dabble in the charismatic church for a while, but only ever in addition to the community that I was deeply linked to. In year 7, I was sure I would be a minister, and I was quite vocal about my faith. By the time I finished school, I was heading to theological college to learn more about what I believed and why. My parents actually took me to the college for an interview, hoping that they would talk me out of it and tell me I was too young. Instead, they were very affirming, and I was more convinced than ever that it was where I needed to be. So off I went, a happy, young, conservative fundamentalist raised to believe in black and white, good and evil, and with a strong sense of justice.
After high school, I took up a 4-year position as a cadet health surveyor at Pine River Shire Council. My connection with the Catholic Church ended in my first year of work. That's another way of saying Nancy dumped me. By the final year of my cadetship, as much as I loved the work, I felt that I needed to be doing something more with my life. And somewhere in the midst of that, my mother said to me, "Why not think about being a minister?" And I fought against this for some time, despite my childhood thoughts on the matter. But in the end, it became very clear to me that this was what I needed to do. It was what gave me peace. And once qualified as a health surveyor, I continued in this work for another year while I went to Queensland University at night to undertake preparatory studies for full-time theological study and formation for ministry in the Uniting Church. A new Catholic connection developed at university, very different to the previous connection, I might add. But I often found myself sitting in the back row at the lecture theatres, and I discovered, so did a lot of the Catholic seminarians, something about the back row and Catholics. We became quite good friends, and we had something in common. We were all single with no prospects of marriage, which was unusual then for students in the Uniting Church who normally came in married, quite a bit older than I was at the time. And in the years that followed, we studied together under the Catholic Uniting and Anglican with the founding of the Brisbane College of Theology. And it was here I came to appreciate more and more the structures of the Catholic Church. I also came to gain a little appreciation at that time of its spirituality. And my final year of formation was spent in the Aitkenvale Parish in Townsville. And in Townsville, my senior ministers regularly held meetings with the Catholic clergy who were just up the road. And I was very touched when, after inquiring with one priest about some aspect of Catholic worship, he presented me with a Catholic missal. And he gave it to me to keep. And there was something about that book, maybe, that when I handled it with great respect, and I don't know what it was, but unlike any other prayer book I had owned, when I held the missal in my hand, I had the sense of I was holding something which had great depth and mystery, and I'm sure God was beginning to woo me then. Townsville was a good year for me. I found I had reached the point of finally being very happy and content with the thought of being single for the rest of my life. I returned to Brisbane for my final 2 weeks at college, which included, in the final week, the college retreat. That's when I met Grace.
At theological college, I enrolled in a Diploma of Lay Education and chose subjects that would enable me also to complete the lay hospital chaplain certificate and eventually to complete my accreditation as a lay preacher. It was initially a very, very challenging experience. You can't imagine my horror when I discovered that Moses didn't actually write the first 5 books of the Bible. And it just deteriorated from there for the first 6 months or so. But gradually, I began to see the bigger picture. And then on retreat, in the last week of my first year at college, I met a final year student who'd been on placement for the year in Townsville. He was larger than life. He taught me to play 500 the day I met him, and he played the piano. He teased me mercilessly. In fact, his first words to me were, "You seem like a real loser. Can I counsel you?" I out-counseled him. And as they say, the rest is history, except that we were just going to be good friends, and I wasn't ever going to see him again once he moved to central Queensland in the January. Well, in the end, by then, we were engaged. 6 weeks and 4 days after that auspicious meeting. What a sucker. Of course, we were engaged and living in different parts of the state. I was studying and working at Woolies. Bob was in his first parish after ordination, knowing no one and with family and friends and me a long way away. We were very lucky to be given the use of a Queensland Rail Pass, which enabled me to travel up regularly after working at Woolies on a Friday. And then I would stay through until Monday afternoon and catch the train back Monday night to arrive straight to go to college first thing Tuesday morning. I made 26 round trips on the train in 11 months. And I think back now and think, ah, the energy of the young and the lure of young love. Telstra actually withheld my parents' first phone bill after our engagement because it was so big and so different to normal that they weren't quite sure it hadn't been a mistake. We could have told them that it wasn't, but we had to actually wait for their investigation and the inevitable outcome. In some ways, it was a year of anguish at being separated, and at the same time, the joy of getting to know each other, of studying and planning a wedding and travelling back and forth. Bob had such different ways of looking at life to those I had ever known. He taught me that I didn't actually have to have everything in a neat little box, but rather that I could have the freedom to look at all the possibilities and not necessarily need to be sure that I had the right answer all the time. This is a mind-blowing thought for a young Scottish woman who had been taught that everything needed to be black and white and that each of us had a place and we needed to stay in it. On the 2nd of January 1988, the anniversary of our first kiss, we were married. One of the first bicentennial projects of that year, but with no government funding forthcoming. When we were first married, we lived in Mount Morgan. And as a young 19-year-old, I was more than 25 years younger than the next youngest person in the congregation. But I leapt in. I got involved in the Ladies' Fellowship, the Blue Nursing Ladies Auxiliary, the youth group. I sat in the middle of pretty much everything that happened in the parish. I baked 60 dozen biscuits every month for street stalls, my first adventure in fundraising, and Bob wasn't allowed to touch a single one of them. And needless to say, I didn't bake another biscuit for about 3 years after we left Mount Morgan. I played hostess at meals for visiting dignitaries, whilst I was pregnant with Kate, I completed my accreditation as a lay preacher, which got me my first taste of, that was really good if you actually wrote it. I learned to play the organ for funerals and church if no one else was available, and I quickly learned to deal with the fact that people seemed to lose all their filters around me. By that I mean they felt it quite appropriate to tell me everything they did or didn't like about my husband, his ways, his decisions, and what they were going to do about it. Through to the other end of the spectrum of having to deal with people who felt, women who actually felt the need to tell me about their attraction to my husband, sometimes quite explicitly. All good preparation for the conversations people needed to have with me as an anomaly years later. I began what has become a lifelong process of reading Bob's writings and providing critique and suggestions. He still gets a groan when I hear him say, just while you're sitting there, I've just got something for you to read. But that's all part of the laughter and the banter that we share. Growing in me, however, was a strong sense of call to ministry. And eventually we actually shared that with our equivalent of a bishop, who wasn't as shocked as I had expected him to be. I was looking at the diaconate, which in the Uniting Church was a permanent and equal ordination to ministry of the word. And it was designated to encouraging ministry in the community. However, it became clear that a move was on the horizon, and off we headed to Dysart Middlemount. I discovered I was pregnant with Timothy within a month of arriving and struggled through a couple of correspondence university subjects, but I was too sick to continue. I should have known then and there that he was a boy.
I should mention on the side here, when Grace came for weekends with me in Rockhampton, I did have an uncle and aunt and a grandmother in Rockhampton itself, so we were well chaperoned. So in both Mount Morgan and then in Dysart, the only other clergy in town was the Catholic priest, and in both places our churches were opposite each other. Our move to Dysart also meant the addition of two Josephite sisters into our lives. And I began playing golf with the priest on a weekly basis. This involved us each commencing from the tee together, then he would proceed up the fairway while I zigzagged back and forth across the tree lines until we met again on the green and finished the hole. So our deep theological discussions barely made sense as they were constantly interrupted by our separations, and sometimes it was a long wait between the start of a joke and the punchline. But we had good conversations after the game. The Catholic congregation, many of whom were heavily involved in golf, approached the club on our behalf to seek a special clergy rate for our membership, and they were told that no such rate existed. But not to be undone, the Catholic congregation passed around the hat to pay for the priest's membership. And when they went to pay for his membership, the club had decided that they would introduce a clergy rate of $10 a year. And left with all this money, the Catholics decided that they would pay for me as well, since I played with their priest most often. And still with much money left, within a week, one member of the Catholic community arrived at our front door to present me with a set of golf shoes, several balls and tees. They had done the same for their priest and felt they wanted to do the same for me. And my thought was, gotta love these Catholics. For a time, due to his illness, Dysart was without a priest, and the Josephites kept the place going and alive. And our friendships deepened. We became closer to the Josephites, who often answered many of the questions about the Catholic Church I would put to them. And it sits at Christmas, since we were all away from our families, once our morning duties were over, the priest and the Josephites would come to our place for Christmas lunch. One year, I think our second last year in Dysart, we were joined by Bishop Brian Heenan for Christmas lunch. And this was his first Christmas as bishop in the Rockhampton Diocese. And he had said to the people of Dysart, "If I cannot find you a priest for Christmas, I'll come myself." Much to the shock of the people of the Rockhampton Cathedral, that's exactly what he did. And hence we have a picture of Bishop Heenan at our table with our children in Dysart, wearing not his mitre, but a bonbon hat. Should be appearing. Thanks, Dave. You just sit there. There we go. I must have been sitting in the high chair that day because it's the one that sent me. But Brian, Bishop Heenan there, and you might recognise many of you, Sister Christine Simmons next to him, who does a lot of work in this area in prison chaplaincy. Thanks, David. But even more in the presence of this wonderful man, Brian Heenan, I continue to reflect on my sense of awe at the Catholic Church, not just its structures, but its spirituality, its way of life, and just how down to earth the Catholic faith is. And I think it was in Dysart that I first began to actually voice to Grace that I would like to be in the Catholic Church. And she did not share my feelings, and there was no way I was going to go without her.
Eventually, the sense of call that I had to ministry was so strong that we actually completed the application process, and I headed to Rockhampton and then to Brisbane for interviews. And what seemed inexplicable was confirmed. Although pregnant with my third child, I was to begin preparations for ordained ministry. But our ministry in Dysart continued: Bible study groups, music ministry, day camping for children, people in our homes 3 or 4 nights a week as a part of hospitality and community building. I was encouraged to become involved as a part of my preparations in some community organisations, and this was a first for me. All of my life had pretty much been lived within the church. Another world of issues and understandings, concerns and challenges opened up for me. I became the community support worker in our small community, running community education programs in schools and the community, providing short-term and crisis counselling, crisis accommodation. I was the agent for several government departments, and I became quite involved in domestic violence work in association with the local police. Social justice issues were opened up for me in a new way that evoked passion and energy, sometimes despair at what I saw around me, and a certain gratitude for the life I had and the wonderful man I had married. There were times when I crawled into bed at night after going out with the police and crawled into bed and just said, "Thank you for being you." My work as a community support worker in Dysart also found us connecting with many Catholic families, and suddenly we found that our friendships and social lives were largely and splendidly filled with interactions with Catholic families who were simply being decent, fun-loving, everyday, down-to-earth people who accepted us as their own. This also gave us many opportunities to explore further what being Catholic actually meant in the everyday experiences of life, and truly opened me up to the joyful earthiness of Catholic spirituality.
In our last year of life in Dysart, and in response to our deeper interest in the concept of spiritual direction, one of the Josephites suggested I go to a spiritual direction workshop at Banyo Seminary, run by Sister Juanita Scurry, who later became my spiritual director here on the peninsula. For 10 days, I was immersed in the spirituality of nuns, priests, and other lay Catholics. And it was at this retreat that I came to experience a sense of the femininity of God, or maybe it was Mary herself. I will never be sure. It was probably a dream, but I was aware one night of a divine feminine form in my room who seemed to be lovingly calling me. And after those 10 days, I became even more overwhelmed by a great sense of love and meaning in the context of the Catholic spirituality. United Church ministers used to have retreats at Nearcoll when I was in central Queensland, and it was at Nearcoll outside of Rockhampton that I found on the shelves a book entitled The Documents of the Second Vatican Council. You should know that when the United Church was established by the original three denominations, its founding document was called the Basis of Union. And this document was only 16 pages, but it was very profound. The documents of the Second Vatican Council in the edition I had was 750 pages. But the similarities, though, were unmistakable. Expressions such as a people of God, a pilgrim people, the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist were the same in both documents. I was engrossed in this majestic document known as the Second Vatican Council documents, and I've later reflected on that moment in history. See, the first suggestion of the concept of the Uniting Church in Australia began in the 1950s. The movements which led to the Second Vatican Council, such as the liturgical movement and the lay movement in the Catholic Church, were also taking place around this time. And the meeting of the Second Vatican Council and the shaping of the early understanding of what it meant to be a uniting church both took place in the 1960s. And the focus of the churches who would become Uniting Church and the focus of the Second Vatican Council was to explore the life of the early church before the Reformation and even before Thomas Aquinas. And the result was that the Uniting Church and the Catholic Church of the Second Vatican Council were both churches of the 20th century who were looking to build their future upon the essence of what the early church would have been like. Both were being renewed by God, and why would they not express the same thoughts? However, in my heart, my attraction for the Catholic Church was growing. At a retreat at Nearcoll at another time, while sitting in the chapel and staring at the crucifix, which I found much more moving than staring at an empty cross, I committed to grace that perhaps a need to find fulfilment in serving Jesus at that time was in being a deacon. So she said we returned to Brisbane for her to pursue her full-time studies, which required her to not only complete her Bachelor of Theology, but also some tertiary studies in another field, which just happened to be the Bachelor of Social Science Pastoral Counselling at the Australian Catholic University. Well, we just couldn't get away from these Catholics. We were completely in their lives as they were in ours. And even though her studies with the United Church she was studying with the United Church, many of the students who were friends of ours were Catholic. I took on a part-time role as house dad and also a part-time chaplain of the University of Queensland, as well as taking on reserve army chaplaincy at the Queensland University Regiment. And there are a lot of Catholics in the army. My office at the university chaplaincy was next to the Catholic chaplain, who was a Jesuit. And I continued to delve deeper into the Catholic faith and especially its spirituality. And that's when I first came to know St. Ignatius of Loyola, the first saint I felt a connection with and my favourite saint, followed closely now by John Vianney. But our social life continued to be with Catholics. And I continued to wonder what it would mean to be Catholic, especially when in the army I discovered married deacons. And I thought that there might be a place where I could continue to serve in the Catholic Church. But no moment in my life will ever compare with that moment when Grace came home from university one afternoon and dropped a clanger.
Of course, living with me, there have been many clangers. But I'll tell you about this specific one in a minute. Our move to Brisbane for my formation and studies filled me with terror and guilt. I knew Bob was leaving a parish he loved, but we journeyed together, so off we headed. No money, lots of debt, three little children, nowhere confirmed to live. And I had, that all fell into place, but I had almost completed my Bachelor of Theology when I then took on the Bachelor of Social Science at ACU as a part of the requisites for ordination. And they actually, you know, in the end, it became a really significant part of my professional training and personal formation. And here I was again, immersed in the Catholic community. And the comfort that had been growing through many relationships helped me to develop a deeper sense of comfort in that community. I even became involved in helping a young friend discern her call to become a religious sister. It was during that time that I came home to Bob and I said, and this is the clangor, by the way, if you're really serious about this, go and do something about it instead of whinging all the time. I'll work out what it means for me if we decide to head down that track. So Bob's first port of call was to Bishop Michael Putney. We had come to know Michael Putney fairly, or Bob had come to know him fairly well through his connection with the university, and they were both on the same ecumenical committee of Queensland churches together, which looked at each other's doctrines. Michael was wonderful in his gentle and cautious way. He decided that we should meet with Father Orme Rush, who was the Dean of the Brisbane College of Theology at that time, so that he'd be able to explain the Catholic faith further to us, to answer any questions and help us to know what we were getting ourselves into. I think at the time we were probably more interested in, you know, as a left-hander, can I cross myself with my left hand? You know, which knee do I have to go down on? All of those sorts of things. As well as all of this, though, it was arranged that we would be given spiritual direction to more fully discern whether this move into the Catholic Church really was the right one. And actually, Bob went alone initially, but by the end of his first session, both he and Sister Juanita Scari came to the conclusion that it was silly for us not to be making this part of the journey together. Interestingly, we can say that we didn't leave the Uniting Church because we were unhappy over any particular issue. We would have remained there for the remainder of our lives. However, the more we looked into it, the more we found ourselves being drawn into the Catholic faith. It really seemed to be a call from God, a remarkable and yet ununderstandable journey to embark on. Of course, one problem was, if Bob was to leave the Uniting Church, he would have to do something to bring in some money. We couldn't afford to be unemployed, and he wasn't Catholic enough at this point to be able to find work directly in the Catholic Church. So for a large part of the year, knowing we wanted to move, we couldn't because there was no place for us to go. Well, that's good at Advent.
You don't know how unemployable an ex-clergyman is. I thought that at the time that my health surveying skills, a role which had now changed its title to Environmental Health Officer, would be too out of touch for me to procure work in that area. We're living in Jamboree Heights at the time, and one day at a school sports day, Grace and I sat with a couple, John and his wife, whose children were friends with one another. And I had known that John was in the army and later learnt that he had something to do with water treatment at the Redcliffe City Council. But as we talked, I discovered that John had been an environmental health officer in the army and had recently been appointed as the manager of the health department at Redcliffe City Council. John found out that I was also in the same field, that I was only working part-time, and he immediately offered me a 6 weeks contract doing a few days a week to fill in while one of his staff was off on study leave. I declined the offer. In my mind, 6 weeks part-time position was not going to guarantee me the full-time work I needed, and I really didn't think I had the skills that were required anymore. A few months later, I met John at the school while we were picking up our children, and again he offered me a similar contract, and again I declined. Around September of 1997, John again offered me a contract, and I declined. I went home and told Grace, and also expressed some of my frustration, that here we were, knowing we wanted to become Catholic, but with no chance to make the move because I couldn't get a job. Grace said to me, "You know, John has now offered you that contract work 3 times. Do you think God may be telling you something?" And the light bulb went off. We found John's number, and I began working at Redcliffe Council for a few days a week, and the rest of the week was taken up in my role as university chaplain. And then before Christmas, John offered me a full-time 12-month contract, confident that I would probably become permanent at the end of the year. And so the light was green. People often comment that our move into the Catholic Church was a courageous one. I'll tell you how courageous we weren't. Our families took the news with some trepidation, but over the course of several years, they adjusted. Anyway, back to our courageous move. At the end of 1997, we were taking 3 weeks' holiday to visit family in Victoria, 3 weeks where we would not be able to be contacted by anyone. So the day before we left, I received word that I now had the full-time contract for a year at Redcliffe City Council. That night we wrote our resignation letters to the Uniting Church and posted them from Warwick, our first stop on our journey south. It meant we didn't have to deal with the immediate reaction from the Uniting Church. I should add that there were those in the Uniting Church who were aware of what we had been working through and had been trying to talk us out of it, but it was still a surprise to them when it happened. On our return from holidays, we moved the children to a Catholic school and we started attending at Holy Family Catholic Church at Indooroopilly. And our children were young and it didn't affect them where we went. In fact, our oldest thought it was a treat that their school was in the same grounds as the church. And I will always believe that the one who sacrificed the most in all of this was Grace. She had to give up the opportunity to become an ordained deacon. Greater love has no woman.
I won't say that some of the loss I experienced wasn't hard and that it doesn't still rise up within me at times, but there was no doubting by this time that a very real sense of us being led by God as we began worshipping within the Catholic community at Holy Family. Even our first day of orientation at the school filled us with a sense of what a loving, caring community it was. There were some major changes for us though. First of all, we lost all of our friendships and connections. Our church was our life and we walked away from it. This was something that took time and we actually remained very linked to some of those people from Holy Family who took us into their hearts from that very first Sunday that we walked in. In fact, Bob married one of their kids a few weeks ago. But also our children had received communion from the age of about 12 months. In their own childlike way, they understood that it was a special meal and that it was Jesus' special bread and wine. They were a way of God letting us know that he loved us. And suddenly we were in a church where none of us were receiving communion, and we made the decision to put the children through the regular sacramental program so that they wouldn't be different to the other children. We thought it would help with their enculturation. In retrospect, I wouldn't make the same decision again. We would all have been confirmed at the same time. Poor Nicola, our youngest child who thrived on ritual, had the longest wait of all. We probably owe her an apology, but we were finding our way and we thought we were trying to make it easier on them at the same time. Bob's time out of ministry also led to a new phenomenon. He sat with us at church. I remember one day as we were leaving for church, the neighbours wanted to play with our kids and they yelled out, to invite them over, and our kids yelled out, "It's okay, we won't be long, we've only got to go to one church today." No, but when we left the Uniting Church, I was quite lost for a while. I did finish my Bachelor of Social Science and then I returned to what I knew, which was community centres. But there was a restlessness there and I didn't really enjoy what I was doing in the same way that I had before. I guess now I look back and I feel I was grieving the loss of what I had expected to be my path. I wasn't where I wanted to be, and the sense of my need to be in ministry, in named ministry, was very strong. I couldn't see that the Catholic Church had much to offer a woman, a married woman. But I didn't even complete my Bachelor of Theology, which seemed incredibly pointless at the time, but I had a real need to finish what I had started. Eventually, a position came up with the Christian Brothers, which allowed me to return to ministry and to work with young people who were experiencing significant disadvantage or who were considered to be at risk in some way. It was a wonderful opportunity to be in ministry, to utilise my counselling and support skills, the energy that I had when I was young, to journey alongside some amazing young adults who were looking to change the world in some small way. Also, for the first time in many years, I was able to participate in spiritual direction, and for the first time, my spiritual director was a woman. I've often been known to say that spiritual direction is the most decadent thing I do in my life. To have someone to share the most intimate part of my soul journey with, to explore it and unfold it, to allow them to hold my most vulnerable self in their hands, and to have them treat it like it is a most precious thing, something to be reverenced, that is almost, it's absolutely humbling. And because I'm a Martha at heart, this has always seemed an incredibly decadent thing to do. It was also during this period of time that we spent a week on retreat as a family, a special time of sharing our faith stories and growing through reflecting on scripture. Our times of family prayer have been really special. And our children's almost unquestioning trust in the journey we led them on and their willingness to embrace every change that came our way have been a tremendous gift to us. Their compassion and understanding care of their grandparents and both of us through nursing them and the stresses that it placed on us all. Their willingness to listen to their mother, overawed by the natural world when I dragged them all bushwalking and I'd stand there saying, "How can anyone be here in this place and not believe in a loving God?" I must say, we loved the fact that we ended up with teenage children we could honestly say we really loved spending time with. And every stage of our parenting journey has been a source of great blessing to us. But I digress. My time with the Christian Brothers was a tremendous gift to me. It helped me to believe that there was still a place for me in ministry. I'll always be very grateful to them for entrusting me with so much and affording me the opportunity to journey with so many amazing people of faith. My roles allowed me to be involved in many different ministries regionally and to take on leadership of a national formation program. However, all of that was coming at a cost. I had to spend a lot of time away from home. I was often giving the best of my energy to people other than my family. And the constant heavy workload was putting pressure on my health. I also knew at that time that Bob was nearing the end of his preparation time for the priesthood, so I decided to make a move. I wanted to be closer from home, work less hours, and be more available to support him in his ministry. For a long time, nothing came along. It's hard to actually find something else of interest when you're doing something that you love. But then out of the blue, a position became vacant at Ipswich Hospice. And palliative care was an area I'd always wanted to work in. And the job met all the criteria I had set down for a change of role. And that was the start of a very long association with the hospice and an enduring interest in palliative care and bereavement. However, supporting carers pre-death got a little bit close to home when Bob's mum started going downhill. And of course, when Bob was ordained and left Leichhardt North Ipswich Parish, the possibility of working in a parish for me, something I had technically never done before, done a lot of unpaid work, but I'd never been paid, came up. I also knew that moving into a parish would allow me the flexibility to provide Bob's mum with the care she needed in her final months.
Stepping back a little bit now, but one of the things that Bishop Michael Putney had us do was to meet with some of the married deacons and their wives, and also with Father Stephen Byrne, Brisbane's first married priest, an ex-Anglican. And despite meeting him, I never once imagined that I would be given the opportunity to become a priest. I assumed that since he was an Anglican, and since in my mind the Anglican Church and the Catholic Church had more in common than the Uniting Church, that this was the reason he was a priest. That's why when Bishop Putney came for lunch to our house one day and offered me the opportunity to be a priest, I almost fell off my chair. It was such a rush. Once I agreed to the idea, the first step was for the Archbishop to seek permission for my preparation from Rome. And it was Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, who gave permission and advised that I would have to undergo 3 years of formation, including spiritual, academic and liturgical. This was based upon a process they had recently put an ex-Methodist convert through in Alaska. But none of this happened as quickly as my description might have suggested. 1998 was our first year as Catholics when we were confirmed and received communion in the church for the first time. And I was able to commence my preparation in 2000. And at the beginning of 2000, my father was diagnosed with a brain tumour. They had only just moved into their retirement home here at Scarborough. And Easter of that year saw him in palliative care in Redcliffe Hospital here. However, Dad rallied and was sent home to be nursed by my mother. And since I worked at Redcliffe, the decision was made for me to move in with them and assist Mum when I wasn't at work. So Grace and the kids continued to live in Jamboree Heights and visit me on weekends. It was probably the worst year of my life. And I dropped all of the preparations for the priesthood. On those weekends when Grace and the children came to visit, other family members watched Dad while we and my mother went to church together. And this is the very church we went to at that time. We sat just over there somewhere, I think it was. Dad died in November of that year, and I decided that 2001 would just be a year to live and to reinculturate myself with my family. During 2000, we were also given a horse. That's another story. Basically, it's about the fact that the horse-loving genes are very strong. And although I chose never to have anything to do with horses after I had to shoot my own injured horse just before marrying Grace, my children, without any influence from me, became avid horse lovers. And the gift of a horse also meant that in 2000, while I spent most of my time with Mum and Dad, Grace found us 5 acres at Minden, which is on the Warrego Highway at the other side of Marburg there. So following Dad's death, we built on the property. During 2001, I found I was really enjoying being back in the health field. I'd only had my original 12-month contract converted into a permanent position. I was later promoted to the role as coordinator of the health program for Redcliffe City Council. Redcliffe was a great place to work. The only drawback was that with our move to Minden, I now had an hour and 40-minute drive each way to get to and from work. And I randomly thought that the best place for me to get a job would be at Laidley. One of the struggles I had about returning to my preparations for the priesthood at that time was that I couldn't justify why I was being given the opportunity to be a married priest when others had left the priesthood to get married. But ironically, or miraculously, I had unintended conversations with 3 men within a 6-month period at various church gatherings. They had left the priesthood to get married. And when they heard what was being offered to me, they all encouraged me to go for it. They said, "You might help us one day. Your story is different to ours." And I also constantly met priests who were always encouraging me to come and join them. If any were against it, I wasn't meeting them. A turning point for us, I guess the funny thing that happened at the end of 2001, I was struggling with my call again, parish or council. And suddenly it happened. Laidley was calling for applications to do the very same job I was doing at Redcliffe. I applied, was offered an interview, and told there would be some delay before the interviews as they were undergoing a restructure. That delay ended up being about 8 weeks. And in that time of delay, I came to the conclusion that I really felt called back to the church. And within 2 days of that decision, I picked up a Catholic leader at the Marburg Church where we were going, and there was an advertisement for the position of pastoral associate at Leichhardt and North Ipswich parishes. So another application was written. Now, we were due to go on holidays again to Victoria on the Wednesday, at the end of the week. On the Wednesday before we were due to leave, our departure being 4 a.m. on the Saturday morning, I Laidley contacted me and offered me an interview at 4:30 p.m. on the Friday. What was I to do? There was no guarantee I would get the position as pastoral associate. Laidley was the ideal place for me if I wasn't going to be working in the church for a while, but we also had a problem. Grace was to be involved in an important meeting at her work, and I had already agreed to collect the children from school at Indooroopilly in the afternoon. I would have to somehow get away from Redcliffe to Indooroopilly and then get them back to Minden and me to Laidley, all in plenty of time to be ready for an interview at 4:30 p.m. Within an hour of the... I get a bit emotional sometimes with this story. Within an hour of the telephone call from Laidley, I knew I had to trust God. And I really believed that it was the church I was being called back into, and if the pastoral associate role fell through, then something else would come up. And I rang Laidley back and withdrew my application. And I did get the pastoral associate role. So 2003 saw me return to Banyo to study in a program that had been decided with Fathers David Pascoe, Orm Rush and Greg Moses. Father Michael McCarthy was the rector of the seminary at that time, and he also became involved and arranged for my formation. My spiritual direction was with Father John Drury, a Jesuit, through whom I completed the 30 weeks Ignatian exercises, a discipline I had longed to do. And finally, to polish me off more, Father Ken Howe began to instruct me with regards to the practice of the liturgies. And towards the end of 2004, with the prospects of a preparation coming to end, Grace and I had several meetings with Father Jim Spence, the Chancellor, who was to be responsible for putting together the application to Rome for me to become a priest, an application which they expected might well take a couple of years to process. Father Tony Randazzo, now Bishop of Broken Bay, had just moved from our diocese to take up a position in the Vatican, and when he arrived in his office in Rome, my file was sitting on his desk. And I do not know to this day how much influence he had in getting the application through the doors as quickly as it did. I think that the application went in September of 2004. I received a telephone call from Jim Spence around the 2nd of February 2005, telling me that my application had been approved by Pope John Paul II himself. And at the time I received that news from Father Jim, John Paul II was also rushed to hospital with breathing difficulties. I don't think the two events were related. Actually, I was looking at the letter. I have got a copy of the letter that came from Rome, and it was written on the 9th of December. So I guess the Episcopal Centre went on holidays over Christmas. It wasn't until February that I was told about it. Things seemed to happen very quickly in 2005. I was made an acolyte lector by Bishop Joseph Uderman in an early morning mass at the seminary chapel on the 14th of March with Grace, our children, Kate, Tim and Nick, and the staff and students of the seminary prison. They kept applying for shortening of the times I was in particular orders and things. So on the 18th of May, I was ordained a deacon by Bishop Brian Finnegan at St Joseph's Church, North Ipswich. It was on the 1st of September 2005 I was ordained a priest by Archbishop John Battersby at St Mary's, Ipswich. I received many letters from people from around Australia I did not know, congratulating me and celebrating the occasion. But one letter came from a married priest in Western Australia who explained that in 1947 Pope Pius XII first allowed a number of married Episcopalian priests to be ordained as Catholic priests. It was based on the fact that since other baptised members of the Christian community, although not Catholic, had laid hands upon these men and ordained them, their becoming Catholic should not hinder them from the ministry to which they had been called and ordained. And it has become a special dispensation now that a Pope can give. The Western Australian priest told me that Australia was the first country outside of Europe to ordain married men in 1969. The first was ordained in Tasmania, and the next day, two were ordained in Western Australia, of which this gentleman was one. I'm told there's approximately 25 of us in Australia, and there are three in this diocese. Most have been Anglican. I think I'm the only ex-Uniting Church one. I should add that the ordination of married men who convert to Catholicism is different to what's called the Anglican Ordinariate, which is introduced by Pope Benedict XVI. These men are Anglican priests who, although given authority to celebrate the Catholic rituals, also retain their Anglican status as priests, so they can use either the rites of the Catholic Church or the Anglican Church, but they are not fully Catholic. I've never had any regrets at the move we've made. In fact, there's very little in my life I've regretted. From the sense of coming home at our Catholic confirmation to the thorough enjoyment of what I do now. When I was in the United Church, I was never completely settled. I sometimes think I'd go off and be a dentist or something like that instead. But now when people ask me how it's going, my usual response is like a pig in mud.
So I had only been at the hospice for a very short time when word came back from Rome about Bob's impending ordination, and everything happened so quickly. It was like a train which had been kind of ambling through the countryside, suddenly going at rocket speed. However, what we experienced as a family was incredibly powerful. Our two opportunities to retreat together prior to Bob's ordinations were a very special privilege. We were able to stop and look at what ordination meant and how we thought life would look for us all and what it would be like to be an anomaly. Bob's ordinations were all very different for me. At his first, I had known him for just over a week and was most unnerved by knowing his family wondered who on earth I was, and at the same time wondering myself what on earth I was doing with this guy.
Stop. Dave, can you share the next picture, please?
Oh.
I think I'm out of order. No.
Go, back.
Go. Oh. No. I must put the end.
Well, you didn't put it in.
We
got we had a photo of Bob's first ordination there.
I put him in. Go back to the beginning.
There it is. That's it.
That's it. So you see, the second person on the right in the front row is Grace, sitting between my dad and my brother. Behind her are all these uncles and cousins of mine, and aunts and cousins of mine. And they all had they spent most of their time wondering who this woman was sitting between dad and my brother, because they had no idea she existed in my life at that time. So.
At Bob's ordination to the diaconate, I was very moved by the intimacy of we literally gathered around Bob to pray for him and to be prayed for by the whole communion of saints. And I think that's the thing that I remember the most. It was nighttime, it was dark, it was quiet, it was very intimate. There weren't a huge number of people there. At his ordination to the priesthood, I was absolutely overwhelmed by it all. For a start, what are the protocols around what a priest's wife wears to his ordination? Anyway, one of the things that really overwhelmed me was just the sense of the gracious movement of God, which had brought us to this place. By the people who came from all sorts of places and different times in our lives, who came together. By the graciousness of the Archbishop, who invited us as a family to recess with all the priests, because I can tell you there were quite a few colourful conversations taking place in our house in the lead-up to that moment. By the awesomeness of the worldwide church embodied in the priests and congregation present. I said to Bob afterwards when we were actually creeping into the back of the Redcliffe Church of all places to actually buy a couple of copies of the Catholic Leader that we had photos in, that it was almost more overwhelming than our wedding. It was the culmination of a remarkable journey that we've taken together. Of course, the story continues forwards. Bob has been ordained for over 18 years, or 37 years last week. And we live the most privileged of lives. As a Catholic priest, Bob has ministered in Leichhardt, North Ipswich Parish, Beval Parish, Kangaroo Point, East Brisbane Parish, the Cathedral Parish, as coordinator of priest chaplains in the Archdiocese, and as chaplain at Queensland Children's Hospital, and now here at Holy Cross Parish. Since his ordination, I've worked and ministered through Dragonfly Ministries, offering counselling, retreats, spiritual direction, professional supervision, and faith formation. I've worked as a pastoral associate at Leichhardt North Ipswich Parish as well, and the Cathedral Parish, as pastoral counsellor at Sacred Heart School, as manager of the counselling services at Ipswich Hospice, chaplain at Queensland Children's Hospital. And I spent I spent 3 gifted years caring for my parents as they came to end of life, and completed my Masters of Theological Studies during that time. And now I work in pastoral care at Mercy Community at Nudgee and in Rockhampton. All special roles. Some of them I left earlier than planned to due to Bob's moves in ministry, but my home and life is always where he is. That always comes first. And actually, it's afforded me some remarkable and diverse opportunities. It especially includes me getting to know the many, many people who invite me into their lives in all sorts of settings. And I'm constantly grateful for all that we share with others. Not the least of which has been the opportunity to sink into Franciscan spirituality, which over time has really deeply impacted my own personal journey. And of course, it's led to some interesting banter in our household over Franciscan versus Ignatian spiritualities.
The amazing thing about this journey we've been on is that we don't feel we've done anything amazing. It is simply that amazing things have happened to us, and we have been carried along by God and by the church, and it has been very clear at the right moments when decisions needed to be made, and when, with Grace and our wonderful children beside me, and a Lord who just seems to keep wanting to lavish love upon me, I'm living nothing short of a blessed life. Friends call me a 7 sacramenta because I've had them all. My faith and priesthood continues to be formed by the events and the people whom God puts before me. And if there is a lesson for faith formation today, I encourage you as Catholics to be pleased to admit to your Catholicism and to speak about it and what it means to you. It was because of people like these that our journey was influenced in the way it was. We might look at those photos. Sorry, don't just quickly go through. So deacon ordination, they weren't great shots there, but that's us and the family with Bishop Finnegan. This was the Litany of the Saints when the priests lie prostrate on the floor. It was Bishop Ken's idea Father Ken's idea, Ken Howe's idea to have the family kneel beside me like that. And that was very moving. A lot of people were moved by that and still talk about it today. That's me making my vows, the oil, hands. That's from the choir loft. You can see the Litany of the Saints. I'm lying on the floor down the front there, and the kids beside me with Grace. Bishop Michael Putney was there to congratulate me. He was Bishop of Townsville by that stage. My first celebration of the Eucharist, and that was the shot that went to the Catholic leader. You can't really see Grace's beautiful dress, but it was a lovely dress. Father John Conway, you know, most of you, he was there, of course. And Mr. Jeremy Howe, who now lives in this parish, but he was a director of the Archdiocesan Services at the time and a great help to us. And my mum fell in love with Catholics, even now, my Catholic children. That wasn't long after. She died not long after that. What I brought, I've only got 20 copies, I thought people would have a quick read and pass them round, is the letter that actually came from Rome. We are now pleased to inform Your Grace that following the decision of the 12th of November 2004, approved by the Holy Father on the 27th of November 2004, this dicastery has judged this petition favourably. It goes on, and there are conditions. If Grace dies, I can't remarry. I certainly can't be a bishop, so that's why I always say to you, you better not die before me. The last thing I want to do is be a bishop. And there are things like not promoting it as something that people would come to assume was ordinary. So although once the news got hold of it, we were in the Australian, we were in Courier Mail, all those sorts of things as well. And I still get journalists trying to contact me, which I always avoid because I hate talking to journalists. But recently Archbishop Mark came out and talked about the possibility of married men in some situations, and they were trying to contact me at the time for my views, but I just don't like to talk about it. because that's part of the condition too, that I don't publicly go out there and say much about it. And the reason I was ordained at St Mary's was because when Father Stephen Byrne was ordained at the cathedral, there were people with placards and protests outside on the footpath. And Archbishop John Bathurst, we thought it might be easier just to have it done at Ipswich, which is perfect because that was where I was known at that point with people around the parishes. And we didn't have protesters around at all.
But, ask questions.
Oh, if you want to stick around, we can answer questions if you have any. I'll just tell you to pass it up the aisle. Just stand up now. You might have questions for Grace. I shouldn't have sent her away. Thank you for sitting through all this. It's long. We've actually did this at a dinner at St Mary's Parish for the annual dinner, and we didn't realise how long we'd gone for, and we've cut a lot out of it since that original script. So, and what is the time?
It's an hour.
An hour. Sorry about that.
Are you still awake?
Thank you. Thank you for this parish because it's it certainly continues to be a treat to be a part of it. And when I finish this 6-year period I've just been reappointed to, I've only got 6 years left to retirement, so I don't know what's going to happen there. It's not a bad place to retire to. Works both ways. Thanks, Tom.
Krishna, if I didn't know people here, I wouldn't come to church.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Thank you. I do joke at times, although I don't want to be a bishop, I have had three ordinations. And in the Bible it says a bishop shall have only one wife. So I sometimes say I'm more qualified to be a bishop than the bishops. We'll leave it at that.